I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
I'm Sean Watson.
And we are Commanderin. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to put a spotlight on the topics you want us to focus on, but never ever talk about three banned topics: religion, politics, and Hearthstone. Remember to check us out on Twitter at CommanderinMTG and talk to us there, or on the EDH subreddit, or on our Facebook. And this episode, we have an excellent episode lined up for you. We will focus on mono-red commanders, and we had to call in an expert, maybe not an expert, the expert on mono-red commanders. He is co-star of the Smash web series and now Netflix hit Video Game High School.
Indeed.
Future champion of the Community Cup.
Hopefully.
The Red, co-host of the Command Zone podcast, Jimmy Wong.
What's up, everybody? How's it going? My spirit color is I am Jimmy the Red, and we're talking red stuff, so perfect fit.
Yeah. Yeah, we had to bring you in once we knew we were talking about red stuff. Thank you for coming on the show, Jimmy.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. It's always good to talk to you, Phil. We gave your show a shout-out when it was first starting up, so I'm glad that I can actually make it onto the show now.
That was a big deal for us. Thank you. We are all three of us huge fans of the Command Zone.
Oh, thank you guys very much.
And we're grateful for you and Jim. We're grateful for you and Josh putting that out.
Jimmy, not once, too. But he's a great guy.
Twice a week, Jimmy. How do you do that?
Well, we're a little bit insane, and we're slowly sort of taking it down a notch. I think we're actually... It's funny that you mentioned it now, because we're trying to do two episodes a week when we have the topics for it. A lot of times we're really searching for that second topic, and so we're going to go... Probably half the month we'll do two episodes a week, and the other half we'll do one episode a week. But yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun because we just get to talk more Commander.
I'm hoping you're going to slow down so the Commander Community podcasts, we can all have topics as well.
Trust me.
Yeah, pace yourself.
You would think that topics would be easy to figure out, but once you sit down and have a pencil and paper in front of you, it's amazing how nothing comes to mind.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
There are a number of times when we've been like, okay, let's cover value red card. Oh, wait.
Well, you guys can always have your own separate top 10 list. Ain't no harm in that. You know what I mean?
Oh, we do.
The more top 10 lists
every time
have.
We try and do one, it's in a week. Somebody has done the same topic that week. We're like, ah.
You know, you guys just have to provide your own special perspective on the topic.
Yeah. It's very funny because we were looking at Donald Miner from EDH Rec. I don't know. It must have been that he was mentioned on either your podcast as coming up or somebody else's podcast. And I was just like, hey, we should have EDH Rec come on our show because we're big fans. And then you guys had him and we were like, oh.
Well, you know, Donald approached us first, so it's all his fault.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, Donald.
Yeah, well, yeah, we knew Donald. About EDH Rec from using the subreddit a lot, so we definitely, when he emailed us, it wasn't like, who's this guy? I was like, oh, I see EDH Rec all the time because I'm always on Reddit.
Yeah, yeah.
Very handy utility.
That was actually the second place I ran into EDH Rec. The first was dexstats.net.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And so before we get rolling with the news, because we're still in Battle for Zendikar spoilers, and hopefully this will be out in only a couple of days. We have a couple of questions for you.
Yeah.
Right, just to kind of prime the pump. I think all of our listeners want to know, all of our listeners already know who you are. And I was going to ask my question, want to know the answer to this question. Mm-hmm. But would you mind giving just a very short description for that one person who has just subscribed to our podcast and does not yet know who the Command Zone is, which is highly improbable. And even less probable what Video Game High School is and what your role is in it.
I don't know. I feel like a lot of people don't know what VGHS is just because it's such a specific thing. So I am an actor and musician from Los Angeles. I also love Magic the Gathering. I grew up in Seattle, Washington, so I played it back in like Ice Age days. And I jumped off the train for a while and got back into a journey into Nyx because my friend introduced me to a format called EDH or Commander. And at the time, one of the coworkers at the office with me, his name was Josh Lee Kwai. We both loved EDH when we first... We were like, oh my gosh, an excuse to get back in and play with all these old cards. Amazing. We'll take it immediately. And so Josh and I started talking like, well, you know, we will both listen to Limited Resources, and there's no Commander podcast out there right now that we think matches that sort of level of quality. So we set out, and it's been a little over a year now, and we made our own EDH podcast called The Command Zone. And that's where we got to meet awesome people like you, Phil, and also our friends like Andy and Brennan. Andy also has a new Commander podcast as well now, so it's awesome to see all of our friends jump into the space, because it's a very broad game, and there's a lot to talk about, and certainly having more podcasts out there is never a bad thing. So that is the Command Zone podcast. If you guys want to listen to that, you can go to @CommandCast on Twitter or rocketjump.com/TheCommandZone. And also, I'm in a show called Video Game High School, which is a 3-season-long romp in the fictional world where video games are the top sport. In the same way that football is sort of the major sport in America, video games are that now. It's a alternate reality, and it's about a sort of a high school that I attend as a student, but mostly my two friends are also there, and it's sort of like Harry Potter, but for video games, is how I like to quickly describe it to people. If you want to check that out, you can just look up Video Game High School on the internet, or you can also find it on Netflix, and it's all there. And it's a short series. The first season is like 90 minutes, and the second two seasons are both 3.5 to 4 hours each. So you can get through the whole thing in 2 to 3 days if you wanted to just sit there and watch them all. It really does not take that much time.
I think my son did it in a day, and he did not sleep for some of that.
Sounds like how I ingested Harry Potter when I first read those books as well. I would just sit there and just read it straight through.
Yeah, I think he wishes he lived in a world in which video games were the top entertainment choice.
He's going to grow up into that world very soon. I can promise him that much.
Oh, I think he is, yeah. Yeah,
that world is very quickly coming and very changing very quickly.
Excellent. And so that leads to one of the questions that I'm sure our listeners really want to know. Are you as good a drift racer as your presumed future nephew, Ted Wong?
Yeah, right. I am not. I've never like officially drifted a car before, but I do consider myself to be a fairly competent driver. I'm not great at driving games, but in real life, I think I'm pretty good at, you know, piloting my own car and not dying. LA is a very dangerous city, especially for traffic and driving and stuff. So I, you know, even though I've been in my share of tickets/accidents over the years, I'm very confident in my abilities as a driver. And whenever I go go-karting, I almost always, with the exception of maybe one or two of my friends, including my brother, get the top scores. So,
well, you take that curve off the 134 onto the 5 in your hip-hop lifestyle Bentley at high speed.
Yeah, my Bentley, a.k.a. Honda Accord, baby. White Honda Accord with tan interiors. I am an 80-year-old Asian male. That's the car I drive.
And not that this will make it into the podcast, but what's your license plate number?
Yeah, right. It is F-U-C. I'm just kidding.
Excellent.
Yeah, I like to roll hard out there.
Many people, you know, I think I mentioned this. I might have mentioned it to you. I know I mentioned it to Josh after I realized, like, oh yeah, Jimmy's in Video Game High School. I also realized that I had met you, or actually consumed your media.
Oh yes,
a long time ago.
A long time ago. Almost 4 years ago.
Yeah, those of us who are familiar with that first or that early work of yours, we wonder, did you ever figure out what Alexandra Wallace meant when she said "Ching Chong Ling Long"?
Ting Tong. I have no idea. I have no idea what she
ting
meant.
Ting Tong. That's it.
But she, I think, moved out of the state. She was getting numerous death threats. If you guys don't know, I made a response comedy music video to a girl named Alexandra Wallace, who was part of a UCLA sorority. Her and her father decided to make a YouTube series where they would make fun of certain things in the world, and they decided that they were going to start it off by making fun of Asians in the library and how loud they were during finals week and how upset she was at that. She did a very crass Asian impersonation. This also, by the way, happened a week after Japan was hit with a tsunami, so her timing could have been more impeccable. The world exploded at her. She got tons of death threats. The vitriol was it was very intense, and I decided to write sort of like a comedy retort instead, and that video went viral. It was like the third or fourth video I'd ever made on YouTube, and that was like my first claim to internet fame, whatever that means. Back then, and since then, I was always an actor in LA, and I've continued that career, and so I've always got that in the pocket as one of my sort of like my proudest videos and one of my best videos I've ever made.
Yeah, you eviscerated her, and you did it in such a wonderful way.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of love over the year from random comedians and stuff because just because of the way it was done and how it was not filled with hate and anger, and
right.
It's sort of like the go-to for a lot of stuff to go sort of to that dark, mean place, and I actively tried to avoid that. So
the way to deal with bigotry isn't more hate, is it? It's love.
Yeah.
And love in the form of mocking is a special kind of love.
Yeah, it's like a very friendly pat on the back. Indeed. You know? Just a little forceful one.
Yeah, and but the best, and I will include a link now that we've talked about it, but what I thought was amazing at the time was not only did you take the time to write this incredible song, and it's a full-on rebuttal, and it pokes fun at her, both her and, you know, at the entire entire ethos, right, of bigotry.
Yeah.
But the way you shot it and you recorded it, it was wonderful. It was fantastic. And I think that combination of the wit and the message and the artistry that went into that, it was fantastic. So kudos to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I very much enjoyed doing that video, and it was a lot of fun. It was sort of like how I'd been doing music videos prior, and then it, you know, it got to it was nice. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, it looked like you were having a lot of fun with it too.
Yeah, for sure.
And I've been to your studio now, so when I looked it up again, I was like, I know that wall.
That's right, you know it quite well.
Yeah. Back to Magic the Gathering. Battle for Zendikar, holy spoiler season. This has been wonderful. And my understanding is this will come out after your card drops tomorrow. So for the people of the future, they have just learned when we recorded this. Not that it wasn't already all over Twitter and EDH subreddit and Facebook. So tomorrow you announce your card. We're not expecting any kind of hints or teasers.
I cannot say anything, actually.
Of course not. You wouldn't want to blow this.
Yeah, totally.
But what's your impression of the Battle for Zendikar spoiler season so far?
Oh, God, it looks amazing. I have no idea what cards will make it into what formats, but the power level is just in an area that we've never seen cards like this before. So it's very, very cool to, like, see just, like, the level of what cool stuff is happening, like Devoid, Ingest, all these new mechanics that are going to change how Magic's played in Limited, for sure. This format especially, and then hopefully, like, its standard's going to be totally warped by this in a good way. And there are so many EDH decks that love the idea of a colorless card because we all want to play different things, and having something that's colorless that we can all cast, new Eldrazi, new just giant cool Timmy creatures, it's all going to be good. Everything is, the whole sea is rising for all formats across the board, except for maybe the vintage Legacy-esque decks, but, you know, it's great. It's I'm very excited to play it in every format.
Of course, those of us who are listeners of the Command Zone already know, but how would you describe yourself as a player using the psychographics and or the Vorthos?
I haven't talked too much about it on the show, but I'm a mix between, I do have elements of being a spike in that I'm always trying to improve how I play. I don't necessarily, there are times when I will play a game suboptimally just because I, you know, like, I'm playing with someone new. I don't want to just, like, do these mean things or whatever. So I would say I'm like a quarter spike, half Timmy, and a quarter Johnny. I love making combos, but I also love just, like, having giant things on the board and hitting you with an Elesh Norn. You know, I think that's, like, the biggest Timmy white card in the world, and I love playing that card. So, I'm a mix of all those two, but at the end of the day, I'm mostly just still a Timmy because, I mean, I grew up loving dragons. I grew up as a red player. I grew up loving Incinerate and Fireball and all that stuff, and just doing big things with tons of mana was always really satisfying to me. So, I'm definitely mostly a Timmy.
So it's important to note there, you mentioned Elesh Norn and Phil didn't cry a little. That's weird.
That card does.
I was on mute.
Elicit some very varied reactions. I'll say that much.
I love that card.
Yeah, as it should.
It's pretty wonderful.
So from Fate Reforged on, You've been really digging the magic sets, haven't you?
Oh, from Kanzan, I've been digging it just because that was like the first set I got into drafting hardcore, and it was like a 5-color set. You could draft whatever you wanted, and the fixing was there, and it was tons of fun. I'm glad that I got in at the time I did, because I've heard Theros Block wasn't as fun or amazing. It was great for EDH with all the gods and stuff and all of the cool cards from that, but as someone that loves Limited as well as Commander, I'm really happy that I got in before Kanzan Tarkir came out.
Yeah, so far, I got into it. I got back into Magic when Theros came out, and so far, Kanz is the better block.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think Balfour Zendikar is going to be fantastic, too.
Yeah, I cannot wait. And so one of the cards that was spoiled is right up your alley, or so it seems.
Oh, which one? Void Winnower?
It's Zada.
Oh, Zada.
Hedron Grinder.
Yeah. Heedstone Grinder.
And so for those who haven't been following the spoilers as closely, it's Zada Hedron Grinder, 3 and a red. He's a legendary creature, Ink Treader, Goblin Ally. He's just a legendary creature, Goblin Ally. 3/3, and we say that because he has the ability of the Ink Treader Nephilim.
Yes, indeed.
Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell that targets only Zada Hedron Grinder, copy that spell for each other creature you control that the spell could target.
Yeah.
Each copy targets a different one of those creatures.
He's a Nephilim without having to be 4 colors.
That's right.
Pretty awesome. This card's great. I don't want to build a deck around it, though. I want to include him in decks that have other colors, because those are the max value spells that you can cast on this guy and get some crazy things going.
So you might put him in a Melek deck.
Yeah, Melek. I mean, I would love to cast some white spells on him, actually. I think white spells actually work really well with this. Someone had Defiant Strike, which was, I think, hilarious, because you just draw... It's a cantrip, so you just draw a billion cards, depending how many cards guides you have out, you know? pretty awesome. It's a really exciting card.
Yeah, it really is. Now, Nate, you've identified some non-bows things that do not work with Zada, is that right?
Yeah, Zada reads instant or sorcery that targets only Zada. So if a card has the word target more than once, it probably does not trigger Zada's ability. For example, Soul's Fire and Cone of Flame, they target multiple things, so it's not going to trigger. But it would be awesome if they did. Another thing, if you're trying mass protection from red, for example, Akroma's Memorial, it means the spells and or the potential spell copies can't target your creatures and then they won't copy. So use Eldrazi Monument instead. All hail the Eldrazi.
Very thematic. Eldrazi Monument's fantastic. Love that card. He's also a bit of a nombo because because cantrips work really well with him, the ones that target him, and if you're playing a token deck, you're not playing a cantrip usually because it can only target one of your tokens. So it's kind of at odds with some of the more broken ways to use him. So I'm going to be interested to see if people can really dig up the cards that maximize his value inside the deck, whether it's tokens or not.
Yeah, I'm thinking Balduvian Rage and Crimson Wisps.
Write it down. Sounds pretty sweet to me. I have to look up both those cards, but I'm sure it works.
Now, Jimmy, do you think he's going to find a home in your Krenko deck?
You know, my Krenko deck has been changing a lot. Right now, it is currently a Felden of the Third Path deck. I just keep finding better legendary creatures that I like to build around for it. Maybe. I think he's going to find a place in maybe my Shu Yun deck, because I do have a lot of cantrips in there.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't have that many creatures, but I could still see it being really effective, copying multiple times just to have more than one crazy attacker flying in. You know, he could be a really good Voltron-y aspect of that deck, in that you could suit him up just as much as you could suit Shu Yun up, and every single time you target him, Shu Yun also gets the same ability with whatever you're casting, so you have two huge threats swinging in, you know?
Nice.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I think Zada probably has Krenko in the 99, but not vice versa.
Yeah, I could see that.
You don't think Krenko's going to run Zada?
I don't think, well, my Krenko at least does not have enough single target instant sorcery cards to be worth it.
That's true.
He definitely has a lot of build around me. You either need to put him in a deck where you're going to use his ability a lot if you're going to play him, because if he's only effective like 20% of the time, then you have to ask if it's really worth it for the one or two times it'll be flashy, you know, in the history of you playing that deck. So if the deck has a lot of that ability already, then you're definitely going to like him.
Do you not put him in just a goblin token deck with a ton of red combat tricks?
Yeah, but the thing is, usually red combat tricks, if you're going to be token in token Z, you want combat tricks that can affect all your creatures anyway.
But they do with him.
They do, it's true. So if he is your commander, then totally. But in general, I find that a full-on aggro strategy like that is often not a not the way to win a game, a multiplayer game at least. 1v1, I could see him being very powerful.
Yeah.
Now, Nate, you have a few more things to say about Zada?
Oh, yeah. Things like Chandra's Ignition and Arc Bond.
Arc Bond, yeah.
Yeah. If you duplicate those... Now, each spell has to resolve before the next one can happen. So if your first spell wipes out a bunch of the potential targets, then the rest of your of those spells for those targets are not going to duplicate. But on the other hand, if you have Arc Bond, if you're using Arc Bond, and you have if you have a couple of big red creatures, then that Arc Bond is going to resonate between them. It's going to reverberate as long as those creatures are still alive. So maybe Eldrazi Monument. Does Indestructible reduce damage to zero, or does it just make them not die?
They just do not die from damage based. Yeah, it's not protection.
All right. So get Eldrazi Monument and cast Arc Bond all over the place.
Sounds like an EDH play that will seriously wreck the board.
It's worth noting that Jason Alt, a previous commander and guest from episodes 4 and 5, he's already got a Zada brewing article up on GatheringMagic.com.
Oh, very
so
nice.
We'll provide
very
a link
exciting.
To that in the show notes. Yeah, it is pretty exciting.
Yeah, Jason has some awesome brews. He's always very on top of it when new stuff comes out. So it's really cool to see.
Yeah. All right. Well, Zada is not a incredibly dangerous card, at least so far is not. And by dangerous, I mean might warp the local meta. And that... That brings us to this episode's The Watch List. Jimmy, this is where we talk about cards that warp the local meta, right? I think we mentioned this earlier. Bribery, Doubling Season, Prophet of Kruphix, Consecrated Sphinx,
certainly.
Deadeye Navigator.
Yeah, The Watch List.
Yeah. We even covered Ulamog the Ceaseless Hunger as sort of a... What is it, a prequel? A pre-visit to the watch list?
Yeah, you never know. I mean, exiling 20 cards is a pretty powerful effect.
Yeah. So, this episode, we thought we'd do something very special. And, Nate, thank you for suggesting this. We're going to let you choose this episode's watch list card.
Oh, my. How exciting.
Nate, you want to introduce these two?
Okay, Jimmy Wong, which of these two cards is more worthy of being on the watch list? Kiki Jiki Mirror Breaker or Purphoros, God of the Forge?
Wow. Very,
which is more dangerous as a commander? Which is more dangerous in the 99? Which is more watchable?
It's like Sophie's Choice.
That is very, very tough. I think... Just off my first gut instinct alone, Purphoros is going to be more often more powerful than Kiki Jiki.
Yeah.
Now, Kiki Jiki's ability is absolutely insane, but Purphoros also has this one word on him that pretty much makes all of the legendary commanders that are gods incredibly hard to deal with. It's called Indestructible. and Purphoros, once he hits the board, the ways that you can interact with him are very tough. Because the ways you can interact with Kiki Jiki all over the place, you can do anything. You can lightning bolt that guy, you know? It's not a problem. But Purphoros does not die to damage base effects. He needs to be minus X, or he needs to be exiled as an enchantment because he doesn't necessarily become a creature. And Purphoros also, you know, both these cards, let's not lie, when they come out on the board, can kill you the next turn. And one rotation of the table may be all that you need. But Purphoros only has one red pip in his casting cost. Kiki Jiki has three. I think Kiki Jiki in the 99 is much scarier because you never know when it's coming. And an opponent can play around you and how much you're going to tap, when you're going to tap it, who's going to be tapped out when they want to resolve Kiki Jiki. As a commander, knowing when he's coming and knowing how much mana you have and whether or not you have enough to cast a Zealous Conscripts and Kiki Jiki, you know, and just find a way to go infinite that turn is really terrifying. Purphoros requires a little more setup. So I think Kiki Jiki is more scary as the commander just because the possibilities of him going infinite or just going crazy are very high. Whereas Purphoros as a commander is maybe not as scary because it requires usually them to resolve another kind of spell to get tokens out or to have some other kind of effect happen for the damage to start piling up. So Kiki-Jiki, where you can end the game on the spot, I think Purphoros has slightly less options of doing that.
Well, you know what to expect with Purphoros.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
With Kiki-Jiki, you really don't know if you've drawn or if the person running Kiki-Jiki has actually drawn the other part of the combo.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I think Purphoros deserves to be on the watch list a little more than Kiki-Jiki, mostly because of Indestructible and the restrictive casting cost on Kiki-Jiki means that really only more dedicated red decks are able to run him without any problems.
I think Purphoros as well, if you're trying to build a sort of spiky red deck on a budget, the cards that go with Purphoros are super cheap, all the sort of goblin dumpers and stuff. And he's great.
Board wipes don't really stop you from going off either, because it's like, okay, I'll just keep making more guys and you're going to die anyway. It's not like those guys that were on the board needed to attack you. You know, I'm killing you in a way that's not combat, you know?
Yeah.
Kiki-Jiki usually requires you to make a billion zealous conscripts, steal everything, and go to combat to kill everyone. You know, Purphoros doesn't need to even have the combat step.
I do like Kiki-Jiki. If I'm running red, I don't run mono red, but if I'm running red, I'll put him in the 99 just to see what he can do, regardless of what else is in the deck, really.
Yeah, definitely.
This discussion of Kiki-Jiki kind of reminded me of my last visit to the therapist, where I talked about the last time you and I played Commander, Jimmy, where you basically had the Zealous Conscript out and kind of whipped swift booty with your Kiki-Jiki once you had him as well. And so Shay Manning, and that got me thinking about your first deck, which reminded me of Shay Manning's question. And Shay Manning is at Jacques_Le_Vert. And he says, do you still have your first Commander deck? If so, how has it evolved? And what was your very first Commander deck?
That's a good question. My first Commander deck was Drownu Lich Lord. It was blue-black, which is not... I don't usually like playing Dimir, just straight Dimir. But I like the idea.
I understand.
I was like, oh, cool. Like, flashback. That sounds cool. And Drownu evolved... because he's also really bad if you look at his top ability. If damage will be dealt to him, you sacrifice that many permanents instead. So there's lots of ways where you can get super punished for using him. So I changed him into a Jaleva deck, or Heleva, as we like to call her on the show. And she added red, my favorite color, as well as the similar idea that you could get cool value off of cards, instants and sorceries specifically, just like Drownu did. And after that, a card called Marchesa came out. And she was the same colors, Grixis, as Jaleva, and I liked her ability the most, and I love the idea of stealing stuff and sacking it. That's like one of my favorite things to do in the game. It's really fun, makes people really angry, but it's also a great way to, you know, help balance the board and play the political game. I really liked the idea of Dethrone and the recursion ability with Enter the Battlefield effects, and in colors that can't really abuse +1/+1 counters that much, so I really enjoyed that. And thus, my first deck has turned into Marchesa and is now my favorite deck as well.
Wow. Yeah, I've played your Lady M so that we don't get into a discussion over the different pronunciations.
There's a billion ways of saying
word.
It. I just say my own. Yeah. If someone wants to correct me, I go, that's your prerogative, man. You do whatever you want.
No, I'm not. No one on the show is correcting you.
No, I know.
None of us is holding back the urge.
Marchesa? Marquesa? There's a... I don't know.
That's the right one, Marquesa.
Lady M.
Lady M, yeah. Your deck with Lady M is ferocious.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I've tuned it up ferocious. And down a bit to make it more powerful, less powerful. But it's got Jace the Mind Sculptor in there, so that should give you a general idea how powerful the deck is.
Yeah, I made the mistake of playing my pseudo-comedy deck, Ashling the Pilgrim. And... you just had that completely under control. You had, I think, a Glen Elendra Archmage, and the Edict effects going, and that was it. Every time you needed to exert control on the board, I had just gotten Ashling out. I think I paid the most I've ever paid for Ashling in that game. I paid like 8 mana for Ashling.
Oh, nice.
And still you forced her to be executed.
Yeah, poor Ashling. I felt bad. It's like playing someone that has just straight Voltron, and anytime it's like, sorry, Fleshbag Marauder, everyone. Sorry, dude. You have 8 enchantments on your guy, but I mean, whose fault is that? Just kidding.
Yeah, that's exactly it, right? All right, so our main topic this week is actually mono-red commanders.
Yay.
Jimmy, we gave you a list early on. Would you mind kind of announcing that list?
Oh, yes. Fortunately, we have the ability to use EDH Rec to give us all of these statistics. So let's go ahead and check out the top 4 mono-red commanders. We have Krenko Mob Boss has a big lead out front with 221 decks registered. Duridium Perforos neck and neck for second and third at 133 and 131. Felden of the Third Path a breakaway fourth at 91 decks. And Ashling the Pilgrim leads the rest of the pack with 55. So I guess that's actually 5 decks total. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yep.
Excellent.
There you go. Old timey horse racing, guys. Let's do it.
Now, have you played all 5 of those?
Against or with? I have played. With. I played against a Krenko Mob Boss deck. I have a Felden deck, and
you have a dog.
Sorry, one sec. I have a doggy for the edit.
He likes Felden, or she.
Yeah, no, right. Okay, let me do it again. I have. Let's see.
I approve. Okay.
And your dog's name is Kiki.
Kiwi. Yeah, very close to Kiki, Kiwi, but not Kiki.
Right. Roro.
So I have played against the Krenko deck, Perforos deck, and a Duretti deck, and an Ashling deck, and I've only myself played a Felden of the Third Path deck, which is originally a Kiki Jiki deck, and a Norn the Wary deck. So my mono-red deck has changed into 2 commanders that are not on this top 5 list. I'm surprised Kiki Jiki's not up there, but I can understand why Krenko's up there.
Yeah. Hey, listener question time.
Very nice.
Because this is a perfect time for at Warlin, who's Richie Tiongson. I think he writes into your show as well.
Oh, nice. Yes. Love to see all the mutual fans.
Well, again, thanks to your introduction of us. He asks, can we call you Kiki Jimmy from now on?
People have actually called me Kiki Jimmy before. Jimmy the Red is usually what people...
Jimmy the Red.
What Josh named me. I think I'm going to call Josh the Infinite because he occasionally goes infinite without realizing it. You can totally call me Kiki Jimmy. It sounds like Kiki Jiki too. Kiki Jimmy. It works very well.
And if so, he continues, if you could create a clone of any one human being, alive or dead... who would it be and why?
Man, that is particularly intense. I would probably clone myself so I could get twice the amount of work done.
Excellent.
I'm sure there's someone historically that would love to clone as well, but I don't. I can't think of that person right now.
Well, Josh would be exhausted because you would just tag yourself in for the second episode each week.
Oh, yeah. No, I would tag my second self in for both episodes so I could do something else while my... I mean, I would like completely divide my labor in half. Much as I could.
But the first person anyone should clone is themselves.
Listeners, we're breaking the fourth wall for our listeners. Podcasting is easy and takes up no time at all, guys.
No time.
Yeah, Josh and I were like, oh, this shouldn't be a huge time commitment. And then we sat down and had to start editing our show and doing all the videos and stuff and uploading it and all the other stuff. And we were like, this is taking a lot more time than we expected. Yeah.
Oh, believe me, we understand.
Yeah, I'd love to have Jimmy around for sure.
You need to do Jimmy, which is have a couple of Americans do all the editing for you.
Oh, very nice.
It's very clever.
Nice. Very smart. Yeah, I like that division of labor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think in a way Jimmy does have that.
I think an Englishman oppressing some Americans has never started a war or anything before, so...
No, it's never started a war. Yeah. But is historically accurate. Nate, you are the commander in Mono Red player. Do you want to talk about things that Mono Red is good at?
Sure. Things that Mono Red is good at doing include haste. It includes burn, which is magic jargon for the newcomers, for direct damage. Furnace.
Hey, we've all listened to the command zone where they talked about the terms of
EDH. Lingo.
Sorry,
I do
magic.
Love burn. Burn was my first. That's how I played Magic.
Lingo Malingo.
Yeah, in the old days, that's how I played Magic, was just straight burn.
Yep.
Yes. Also,
yep. Hey, did you ever come up with card rules for Lingo Malingo?
Our viewers did. He's just a worse Kiki Jiki that, he's just strictly worse Kiki Jiki that costs more and everything. Red also likes trample. There's a good amount of trample in red.
Trample?
Yeah, some red cards have trample.
Yeah, it is secondary in trample. Mm-hmm.
All right. It's also good at furnace, which is jargon for double damage. It's at destroying artifacts. And although it's usually frowned upon, red is really good at destroying lands.
Sean loves that aspect of red.
I don't hate it, honestly.
I don't mind singles. Be more clear, I don't like mass land destruction.
You know, I played that in a game yesterday, and it helped me win the game immediately. I wouldn't have done it otherwise, I'll just say that much.
It just...
Yeah, you save it for a finisher.
What did you do?
Well, I started casting... I was playing my Planeswalker deck, and one of the Jaces, his -8, if you have Doubling Season out, you can immediately ult him when you cast him. Mm-hmm. Lets you search your opponent's decks for a non-land card, and you can cast it without paying its cost. So I started casting Rise of the Dark Realms, and I had cards from other decks that could double it, so I had like 26 2-2 zombies on the battlefield, and then I cast Armageddon from someone else's deck to just ensure that no one else could do anything. I also board wipe beforehand, so I just did a ton of stuff, and then I made sure no one could cast anything, and then I was able to just swing out and kill everyone the next turn.
If you cast Armageddon from somebody else's deck, you get a pass in my book. That's fine.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. That's definitely just desserts.
It was certainly not in my deck. I'll say that much.
You'll get special league points in Sean's league.
Ha.
The league in my head. I'm winning. I was as surprised as you, but I recounted the points, and lo and behold, I am winning. It's weird.
Sean usually employs a retroactive point system.
All right. Okay, Native, can you summarize the tribal options?
Why, yes, I can. Tribal options include goblin, human, dragon, maybe spirit, maybe ogre, elemental.
Yep.
Vocational options include berserker, barbarian, shaman, and warrior.
Wow.
That's excellent.
I want to make an ogre deck now.
Yeah.
Huh.
You have to go back, I think, to the Kamigawa block.
Yeah, certainly.
Tricky.
One of the ogres has an ability where if you attack him, he can pay 3 and just put a ogre token into play.
Kodzu?
Wow, crazy.
Kodzu, I think. Mm. Something like that.
And so, Nate, can tribal work in mono-red EDH?
With goblins, absolutely, yes, they can.
Oh, yeah, it can.
With dragons, like Zirulin of the Claw, probably.
Yeah, our friend Rev plays a Zirulin deck. It's a lot of fun.
All right. Does it win a lot of games?
Yeah. You know, I think mono decks all have the possibility of winning big in games if you let them go unchecked. And they just get a couple of key pieces out. Because there's so much dependence on artifacts. If you just let some of those go crazy, then you're in big trouble.
All right.
Hmm.
If you're going Barbarian, Warrior, Berserker, there is a commander called Lavisa Cold Eyes. I think that has potential there.
Oh, very nice.
If you're trying Samurai with Godo Bandit Warlord, I don't know. There's only 9 mono-red Samurai, and they're mostly legendary with horsemanship.
Yeah, he's mainly an equipment and enabler.
Gotta love horsemanship, though.
Yeah. Hmm. All right. And so go on. What about Jaya Ballard?
Okay, considering discard to burn commanders, such as Jaya Ballard, Taskmage, and Latula Keldon Overseer, the more general question becomes, how do you fix card draw in mono red?
Mm-hmm. It's a very legitimate question. It's definitely one of the things that mono red decks struggle with, and we talk about this a bit on our show as well. You gotta just find a way to really get card draw in there, and it's almost always going to be artifact based.
So Nate has listed Howling Mine, Font of Mythos, Temple Bell, but those are symmetrical. And what about, and then he mentions Mind's Eye.
Yeah.
Mind's Eye is not symmetrical, but it costs you mana, but it's useful.
Yeah, Mind's Eye is fantastic. There's also, Red has a lot of their own exile effects that, you know, like Abbot of Carol Keep is one of the new ones that came out recently, as well as a lot of the Chandras and the Siege that is associated with Red as well. Outpost Siege, I think.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's basically an extra card every turn. Yep.
And red is great at getting lots of mana as well. So,
yep. Red is also good at the wheel effects, like Fortune and Fate, Reforge the Soul, Molten Psyche. There's a couple of red cards that I've recently taken a shine to. One of them is Humble Defector. It's one in a red, creature, human, rogue, 2/1.
Love that card.
And if you tap him, you draw two cards, and target opponent gains control of Humble Defector. Activate this ability only during your turn. So here's a true story. Hey, Nick, since we are both playing mono red, how about a gesture of truce by me tapping this humble gentleman here to draw two cards? Then he defects to you. And then on your own turn, you can also tap him for two cards. Then he defects back to me. And as long as Link over there has the dominant board state, we can repeat this process. And Nick says, sounds good. And Link chuckles in approval, disapproval of the shenanigans.
Poor Link.
Yeah. Yep. Link's that most certainly happened in a game where I was going crazy at the Tasigur deck and had Consecrated Sphinx and all these other things out. And there was four other players, and they all got to draw off Humble Defector probably six times as it went around the circle and always just conveniently skipped me, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hey, that's the same Nick who is Nick Jaragoski, friend of the show, correct?
That is friend of the show, Nick Jaragoski.
Yeah, because he asks a question of Jimmy. Name the planeswalker you trust to save you from a nightmarish plane and why. Bing!
Bing, holy goodness.
Yeah, anybody who listens to the show
I would probably trust Elspeth. She seems like the most loyal and willing to sacrifice herself, planeswalker, you know, considering she has now been sacrificed in a very sad way. I think, yeah, I would trust Elspeth the most to pull me out of a sticky situation.
See, you're only one of our guests that we ever had on has not chosen a white.
It just makes sense, right?
Yeah, I think
they're the most protective.
Yeah, oh, they're the most effective.
I kind of expected you to select Chandra, but she's too unpredictable, isn't she?
She is. She's a fiery one, you know. She has has her own. She's made up her own mind, and it's hard to change it sometimes.
She might be a huge fan of EGHS.
She could totally be. I think Jace is also, a strong contender for someone that has a lot of good intentions. Because I don't think someone like Tezzeret's gonna go ahead and save my life if I ask for it. You know what I mean?
Depends what you can give Tezzeret, really. I think.
I was just gonna say, if you have a nice shiny object, maybe Tezzeret would do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So Nate, why don't we talk about Ashling? You have an Ashling Pilgrim deck that actually does make the joke of mine.
We don't usually try to steal each other's commanders. Like, I've left the Mimeoplasm and Lazav alone, and you guys have kind of left Jaleva alone. So I will admit that I kind of took Ashling from you because you considered it a joke deck.
Yeah.
But if you don't treat it as a joke deck, it has a surprisingly high win ratio because people don't see her as an imminent threat. It's more like the active volcano that slowly builds pressure until it wipes the board. And often at any given time, only one player at the table does not want that board wipe to happen. So it's easier to make allies with all the other players who are not currently winning.
Then he straps a Darksteel plate on her, and everyone goes, and the one person who did want her to die goes, see, I told you. Told you to kill it.
Well, no. It's not so much the Darksteel plate, it's the lifelink. Once you put lifelink equipment on her and you blow up, against a full board, then everyone sees her as the immediate problem. So if you pull that move, be prepared for the consequences.
Oh, what's it? Basilisk collar on her. Just screw you.
Yep.
I've managed to win a couple of games with even my Ashling deck because she's underestimated. But once you do strap a collar on or something that makes her an actual threat, then it gets everybody's attention. Usually, I hide out in the corner while all the big kids play. And I'm lucky if I survive long enough to actually trigger her a couple of times.
Yeah, certainly.
But Jimmy, Nate's deck has a normal ratio of land, has plenty of cards in it that aren't mountains.
a lot more ramp, I'm guessing.
And he manages to kind of whip butt with it. What's our next card, Nate?
All right, let me pull up the.
It certainly isn't Heartless Hidetsugi.
Hidetsugi.
It's a hard one to pronounce too.
Felden of the Third Path. Love this guy.
Felden of the Third Path. 1 and 2 red. Legendary creature, human artificer. 2/3. And if you pay 2 and a red and tap him, you can put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of target creature card in your graveyard. Except it's an artifact in addition to its other types. It gains haste. Sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step.
So, Jimmy,
yo,
what made you switch to Felden?
So, Felden has an ability that's very similar to Kiki Jiki in that he can kind of make a copy of a creature in your graveyard, except Kiki Jiki can't target stuff in your graveyard. Now, I really, really like Felden because of one very specific thing. Usually, abilities like this force you to exile cards that you bring back.
Yeah, they do. Whip it
and
out of
Felden just
somewhere.
Sticks them back into your graveyard, which means that you could multiple times just do the same thing, you know, same creature or whatever. And it's great for creatures with Enter the Battlefield abilities. And I found that in a Kiki Jiki deck, the thing that saddened me the most is that Kiki Jiki or whatever my favorite target was would always end up dying or in the graveyard. And Felden has a way to interact with that that is repeatable. And I think actually in the long run more powerful because it's a lot more easy to get away with without people realizing what you're doing.
So what's a particular favorite combo with Felden? Like what creatures work best with him in your experience?
I mean, there's a great card. If you have like a card like Hamlet Black Goliath in play, anything you return with Felden can be crazy good. I love doing something like Hoarding Dragon because you're going to always get the artifact back when you have to sacrifice a creature at the end step. A card like Duplicant is just so powerful. love doing Duplicant. It is very great to duplicate off something and do it again and untap and do it again. And there's lots of abilities in red that allow you to untap stuff, which makes it super, super important to use someone like Felden because then you can just start abusing that ability.
Have you played against Heartless?
I have not played against Heartless. I've drafted it several times in Conspiracy and also our friend's multiplayer cube. It seems incredibly powerful, but at the same time, it also seems like it just ignites a ton of hate for you.
Have you ever used him as a commander or just in the 99?
I've only seen him used in the 99 against me. I have not used him as a commander myself.
I think a lot of the good cards he keys off of are black, so Wound Reflection springs to mind.
Yeah, totally.
So I've only ever fought against him as part of a Rakdos deck.
Uh-huh.
Although, because he's doing damage, if you play something like a Dictate or a Furnace Effect, it's pretty much a kill unless you're at odds, unless your opponent is at an odd.
Not unless you put lifelink on him.
Well, it draws the game then, doesn't it? Most of the time. No, because you die immediately as soon as your life total hits zero. There's no, it doesn't go on the stack, the damage. So lifelink won't actually trigger as you deal the damage. You'll kill yourself as well.
Mm-hmm.
So no, lifelink won't help you.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly.
Good catch. So the concept of switching commanders out, right? This is kind of the ongoing evolution of a commander deck. And so that's where you would switch out Kiki Jiki, for example, or you could, in theory, switch out Kiki Jiki and Krenko. Mm-hmm.
Kiki Jiki can switch out with a lot of stuff that... Because, I mean, in general, you're going to play sweet Enter the Battlefield ability creatures, and they're all going to be good because they do something when they come into play. So Kiki Jiki is definitely exchangeable with a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, and then Norrin the Wary actually works well as a replacement for Purphoros if you have Purphoros in the deck.
Uh-huh.
The trouble, of course, with Mono Red is tutoring out Purphoros.
Yeah.
We can go on quite a bit about Mono Red commanders, in fact, as we have. But I know we only have you for a limited time, Jimmy, because you have to prepare for your big announcement tomorrow.
Yeah, we have to get our video out as well. We're going to have a spoiled card. Although by the time you listen to this episode, that card will have been spoiled.
Yeah. Yes, and I can say with great certainty that we love that card.
Yes, it is going to be a good one. I think every EDH player will probably find some use for it.
We should record three possible things. So Phil saying he loves it. One of us should record. I think that's okay. And then, well, that sucks.
Exactly.
Edit as appropriate.
Excellent.
Precisely,
excellent.
Yeah.
So we ended up with many dozens of listener questions here. So I think what we'd like to do, we kind of do this power round, right? Where we ask a listener question, and then you just throw out an answer. Do you mind playing along with us?
This sounds great. Super fantastic.
All right. So Arcbound Master at BHARN23 asks, what one card seems to make its way into most/all of your commander decks?
Solemn Simulacrum.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
At MTG Prowess asks, if you could run a playset of any commander legal card in your commander deck, what would that card be?
Soaring. It's a boring response, but oh my god, Soaring.
That's excellent. Hey, Taps for Pink Mana at Pink Mana Matt. Hi, Matt. If you had to remove one color of mana, which one would it be?
Blue.
Shut your mouth.
So the world can burn without any water to stop the flames.
Sean's choice is actually green, right?
Green doesn't exist. There's a color square. I've told you this lots of times.
Right. Color square, yeah.
What would you say... Oh, sorry. I'll introduce. This is at PDX_gamer. And he asks, what has been the most important factor in the success of the show?
Of the command cast? Most certainly having very passionate viewers and listeners the ability to meet up with you guys and just have your support as we continue and get cool guests and stuff and being able to interact with you guys on the show. That and the emails we get for sure has been the one thing that keeps us passionate and keeps us wanting to keep it going.
Absolutely. I think anybody who records a podcast understands that it really is the listener support, the love reflected back to
certainly.
Us. Because of course we're doing this for love of the community.
Yeah, totally.
So Merlin, who is at DerCokeXXL.
Oh, yes, we've talked to Merlin a lot.
Yeah. It's German.
Yeah, there you go.
He asks, what general would Ted Wong play? Guesses on the other main VGHS characters?
Oh, gosh. Let's get back to this one at the end of the show. I actually have to think about this. This is hard to figure out.
Okay. PDX_gamer asks, how does it feel to rep the EDH community in the Community Cup?
That
we haven't spent enough time talking about that.
You know, I am so excited to play in the Community Cup. Me and M. Cyborski are the two sort of main EDH players, the ones that represent EDH the most. So I'm really, really excited to go. And I'm so honored to have been chosen without, you know, sort of the community vote this year. It's a huge honor. I mean, it's awesome. I wish Josh could be coming along with me. I understand why not, that they have space constraints and stuff. Hopefully Josh will be able to go next year. If there is another community campaign, I'm going to campaign hard for him to go. But yeah, it's going to be super fun. I can't wait to just hopefully bring a lot of energy to the stream and provide everyone with something different than, you know, normal GP coverage and stuff. Loading Ready Run is going to be producing it. I really think it's going to be something that's going to be more special and fun and really enjoyable for viewers to watch. Both from a production standpoint and from the people doing the show, because we're all big personalities and we all have loud voices and have a lot to say. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun and a lot more interactive than our community cups in the past.
Let's hope you and Adam can turn it into an EDH-like experience. And if you're playing with Battle for Zendikar cards, you will.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Robert Andrew Black from Facebook asks kind of a long question we would have asked if we had time, but he distills to, is the 1v1 format spreading in popularity to a point that multiplayer could be swallowed up by this format as a sanctioned event? What are your thoughts on the two types of commander formats?
1v1 EDH? It depends if you're playing with the rules that ban stuff like Sol Ring and stuff or not.
Yeah, it's the French version.
The French version. I personally have never played that. I have played lots of 1v1 against like my friend Craig and stuff with just our EDH decks, and I think that's actually a lot of fun. I really enjoy 1v1 because you're not used to being able to take a turn so quickly. Usually it's like, all right, I'm going to wait 20 minutes, going to check all of Facebook in the meantime, and then, oh, it's my turn. Okay, I knew what I was going to do, and then you go and you wait again. So I do like 1v1 a lot. It's never going to take over, I think, the essence of EDH, which is being able to play with a big group of friends and have everyone show off the things they're doing and have fun simultaneously. But I could see 1v1 and more competitive stuff being more popular as more sort of spikes and players that have not approached the format before slowly get into it. I was actually talking to a real Magic pro at PAX, and he said he enjoyed playing EDH a lot, specifically as two-headed giant. So it still had that 1v1 feel, yeah. but still had, you know, four players instead of just two. And it was something that you could still definitely be a spike at and try to win, which I thought was actually really interesting to hear.
1v1 is easier to run as a sanctioned event than multiplayer.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the power level is a lot more tamed down when you have that French ban list.
Yeah. Okay, so, Jimmy, we are definitely imposing on your time, but I want to ask a couple of questions. The EDH subreddit was amazing. And if you have any spare time, we've got a thread in there. You can just go in and answer some of these other questions. But do you mind if I ask a couple more questions from the EDH? Okay.
Oh, my God, there are 58 comments on this thing. Holy crap.
Yeah, it's insane.
Answering some myself.
It was great insane. That's what I'm saying. So BV310 asks, if you had to recommend two decks to be played against each other to teach newcomers to the format, what decks would those be?
Oh, wow. Okay, I would recommend that they play... I mean, it depends on what you really want to show them. If you want to just show them like what cool stuff can be done, you should do something like a Kalia deck versus an Animar deck, which are two decks that just love to cheat stuff out and sort of appeal to the Timmy aspect of the game, and they're both in very different colors. I think the easiest way to teach someone that's new to the format is by playing two mono color decks against each other, because the focus of the colors are going to be very specific in what they do. Like the blue ones all going to be about counterspells and bouncing stuff, and the red one's going to be about artifacts and recursion and stuff. So I think it's a mix between the two. Do you want to show people how the game is played, or do you want to show people how crazy things can get? Or do you want to show people how you can do stuff on a budget, in which case, you know, play like an Edric Spymaster of Trust deck against an Infect Rafik deck or something. You know, there's like lots of cool ways to showcase different parts of the format. I think the question is best answered by what you want to do with the decks and what kind of example you want to set for the person playing.
Would you start simpler, like the mono-colored precons attempted to
do? Yeah, I mean, I think if the person doesn't really have any idea how Magic works, it would definitely be better to do that. You know, if they're familiar with Standard and Modern and stuff, then you could definitely go a little more complex and add more colors in. But I think in general, like following in the tracks of what Wizards does with their teaching decks and their starter decks, one color to start off with, one type of mana, and then slowly adding to that and showing people like you can play two colors with these cool lands that do two colors of tapping, etc., and all that.
Yeah. Okay. Childish Serpent asks a very good question that may be a bit long. I'm sorry. And if it is, then we'll just end here. Wizards asks you to design the next Commander supplemental product. What deck archetypes do you design?
Jeez. Well, I know Josh has been wanting to have four color for the longest time. I think it's actually pretty cool. I don't know. I think I would do four color as well at some point. I don't know if the next one needs to be it. I mean, we've done one color. We're going to do two color this time, and then we've done three color as well. Oh, this is tough. You know, I think four color would be really fun, and we've talked about this a lot. Four color is not about the colors that it is, but the color that it isn't. I'd love to see some really cool restrictions on deck building that really affect your deck as a whole, like cards you control, you know, whenever you have this commander out, cards you control, if it's all the colors that aren't red, for instance, cards you control cannot like do damage to someone, you know, and instead of being a positive things, the four color commanders would have negative aspects on them, but also a really powerful effect otherwise. And it'd be great to see like how you could restrict a player to open up their imagination more and what kind of cool decks they could build from that.
That's excellent. We'll ask one last question from a person whose name I'll have to bleep out because we don't support.
Boop, boop.
Hail Satan.
Oh my.
Asks, Kresh, Narset, and Tassiger walk into a bar. What do they order for drinks? Who leaves with the best date for the rest of the night?
Okay, I'm assuming they mean Kresh the Blood Braided.
Yes.
And then Narset, they're going to be talking about Narset Enlightened. And then Tassiger is just Tassiger. So Kresh, let's see. Whenever another creature is put into the graveyard from play, you may put X +1/+1 counters on Kresh, where X is that creature's power. Narset, whenever she attacks, she exiles the top... How many cards? Four cards of your library until it enters. You can cast non-creature cards with this way without paying their mana costs. And Tassiger is a 5 and a black commander that has Delve and can also afford two and then two Simic. Put the two top cards of your library into your graveyard, then return a non-land card of an opponent's choice from your graveyard to your hand. Whew. Okay. Let's see. Kresh, what kind of drink would he want? He would want a drink that you can level up, that when you drink it, he would probably get like a Jaeger bomb or something, because it drops into the drink, it like immediately levels it up, and then you drink it all, and you get plus X or whatever. Narset would probably go in there, and she would order like a water, and in response get like a Long Island iced tea. Tassiger would probably, let's see, he would want to order maybe something banana themed.
I was about to say, it needs bananas in it.
Yeah, it needs bananas in there. Maybe he shows the bartender all the fruits he can put in the drink and says, make me a drink with one of these, and the bartender makes him like a banana something.
What's super decadent as a drink? Because I think he's a bit of a dandy.
Yeah, he's definitely a dandy. Maybe it's like a daiquiri of some kind. Something with a lot of sugar. Yeah, I don't know. Is a daiquiri decadent? A decadent daiquiri? Who knows?
It can be. Yeah. I guess the entire premise is flawed because Tassiger would be born on a litter into the bar, not actually walking.
Oh yeah, that's true. So maybe it's a cool, delicious drink served in the like helmet of the dead skull of another enemy.
I know what sure. Tassiger would drink. He'd order whatever Silumgar wanted because he was hanging around his neck.
Yeah, exactly. So Tassiger is definitely not leaving with the best date because he Silumgar has been texting him all night, and he's been like, I gotta get back to Silumgar soon, otherwise bad things will happen.
Narset gets four drinks for free.
Yeah, four drinks for free every time, and no one can touch her because she's like, you can't charge my credit card, it's got hexproof. I think Kresh would probably walk out with the best date because Narset would just be doing so much busted stuff and getting hammered and just making everyone generally upset at her. And Kresh would like, just go out there like just so pumped up. He's just the buffest guy, and he would.
Narset's like the really hot person at the party who everyone secretly hates. Look at them with their good looks and their everyone being popular. I hate you.
I think. All three of them each leave with a send triplet.
That's great. That's fantastic.
That's really good. That's really good, Nate.
We haven't answered the Ted Wong question yet.
Send triplets. Well, we have to get back to the Ted Wong question. But first, let's clear the palette. You have just entered this contest. You have to name the poster of this question. When is it acceptable to listen to Nickelback?
Oh, that would 1,020,000% be Jason Ault.
1,020%.
No one else. Unless it was someone else from the Brainstorm Brew. No, it's definitely Jason. It's got to be Jason.
In fact, you are correct.
Ding, 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 ding. Ding, ding, awesome. Ding.
Or should we say bing, 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 bing?
Bing, 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 bing. Yep. Yeah, that's awesome. We tell that story on our GP Vegas recap episode. Jason, I had a great time playing craps with Jason out in Vegas. That was by far one of the best weekends of my life, I think.
Yeah, that was a great weekend.
Yeah, it's freaking so much fun.
All right. So now back to that. What general would Ted Wong play?
Ted Wong, I think, you know, and this is not a cop-out answer, I think Ted Wong would play a general like Kiki Jiki or something with haste on it. He might be a Narset player too because he just wants to go fast, fast, fast. He wants to race. He wants to be there and beat you before everyone else. Maybe he's like a Gisela player, Gisela Blade of Gold Knight. Let's see. I think Jenny Matrix would definitely be the spikiest player out of everyone because she's most certainly a winner through and through. So maybe she's a Narset player. She's a Narset player, or maybe she's a Rafiq player. She is brutal with her efficiency and wants to end the game on her terms. I think Brian D, oh man, I don't know. He plays for the love of the game, you know, so he would probably play. Ooh, this is a tough one. I have to like go to EDH Rec and just look at some of the top generals. He would want to play something that's super fun. Let's see. Lin Vala. Did you say Lin Vala? Yeah, right. Let's see. Brian D is like a white, blue. Maybe he's a little bit of red too. Is he red? Is he red? Is he?
He's kind of emotional.
Is he Jeskai? Is he? I'm I'm trying to think of what he's going to be. Let's see. Yeah, I think it'd be red, white, blue. A lot of, actually, you know what? Maybe I think he would play Shu Yun. That seems like a good general for Brian D, because there's lots of crazy antics you can do with it. There's lots of cool tricks you can do and fun stuff and sort of surprise people out of nowhere. And
so, you're not expecting Shu Yun, are you? It's a surprise when it happens.
It is a surprise indeed. And I guess Ki would want to play a general that maybe hearkened to her love of game design. So what do you guys think is the best, just craziest, most intricately designed general and complicated?
Oh, God, that's a complicated Marith. Question. Marith.
Marith? Marith Garth is a good one. Maybe Experiment Kraj or something. I can see that being a reality.
That's kind of crazy.
I think Garve, because you have to put a lot of thought into the timings of things and when it's right to do stuff and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That was
an
awful sentence. Sorry.
All the stuff. Yeah, Garve's a good one too, for sure.
Jimmy, we have definitely imposed on your time, and we are so grateful that you spent this time with us. Sean has a he wants to extend a thank you to a couple of people.
I did, yeah.
Go ahead, do that, and then we'll thank Jimmy.
I would like to personally thank Tareen Flame for being our European listener. Yeah, he's the only one of you that's given us a review on iTunes, a 5-star review, mad for iTunes Europe. And I do watch like a hawk.
So we're very grateful.
And he
for that
did
5-star
it.
Review.
Yeah, we are very grateful. And he did it before I threatened all of Europe on last episode. So,
yes.
well done, Tareen Flame. And also, I don't know who you are, but looking at our data and where stuff's downloaded from, I'd like to thank our one Egyptian listener, or at least person living in Egypt who's a listener, our only African listener or African resident. Thank you. You represent an entire continent, sir. Well done.
Yes, well done,
madam.
Well
sorry,
done,
sir or madam.
No pressure.
And Africa is a growth market for our podcast, so we will be extending more Egyptian and or Sub-Saharan African content into our show. And so, Jimmy, thank you very much for coming on the show. This has been wonderful. We, as you can tell, we would talk to you for hours. And you would never get anything done, and you still have a fantastic video and audio podcast to review, just because it has a spoiler. Any hints? Any hints at all? Is it a magic card?
It's a magic card. You can play it in every deck.
Oh,
so that
should
give you some. And you know, it's Battle for Zendikar, so it's got to have something to do with the word colorless, but I won't tell you exactly what it has to do with that.
Does it have a bonkers
CMC? You can play this in every
CMC.
Deck if you wanted to. It's going to be interesting.
All right.
It's definitely a commander card.
Oh, we are...
salivating.
We are salivating, exactly.
Yeah, you guys will find out at about 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time tomorrow. And everyone else that's listening to this, it's already going to be online at rocketjump.com/thecommandzone.
Yes.
You can find
yes.
it there.
I guess we should say we have been salivating since seeing it because it's so fantastic.
And I should say
perfect.
It was okay. You know, I didn't really have a strong opinion. Nate, you have to hate it.
Rawr. Rawr.
All right. Jimmy, you've already listed some of your contacts. Do you want to list any more? We're, of course, going to put everything in our show notes.
Sure, yeah. You can find me on Twitter at JF Wong. Most importantly, though, just follow at CommandCast. And if you guys are listening to this before the Community Cup, you can check out the Community Cup. It's going to be streaming on Twitch the weekend of September 18th through the 20th, twitch.tv/magic. It's going to be really exciting. I cannot wait. I haven't been as excited for something like this in a long, long time, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's really cool. We'll all tune in.
Yeah, I just got to represent you guys, the EDH community. That's what it's about. It's about pushing our stuff out there. We are the commander players of the world, and we will make our voices known.
Yeah, every time they cut to you and they ask you for some opinion about something or how some play went, just make sure to look directly into the camera and say, play EDH.
Yeah,
no pressure.
Commander for life.
Jimmy, if you lose the Community Cup, I think you should play with only mono white decks for a year.
Oh my goodness. That would be...
Ooh.
Jeez.
Or is that,
right.
is that too
That'd
harsh?
Be brutal.
That's really harsh. I wouldn't do that. There was no way I would adhere to that. So, Jimmy, thanks again. Absolutely.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, we've had an absolute blast. So, listeners, we'd love to hear from you, so please take the time to contact us and especially give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Jimmy and Josh have said the point much more eloquently than we have. It makes us feel a lot better to see those, and we can point to it to the folks who care about such things and say, hey, look at that. And our Egyptian listener, I really hope we hear from you. We don't know who you are, but hopefully you will decloak and let us know who you are. Our theme song was created for the podcast by, who's this? Nate Burgess.
Never heard of him.
Yep.
Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto, who also did our Zombro token. And he was assisted in making that logo by Kelly DeLuca. You can find more art from Mr. Picto by going to mrpicto.co.uk. And special thanks to Tech Wizzes Jesse Thompson, who I told the other day we mentioned her at the end of every episode, and she was like, what? She's British. And Graham Frank, and also to Justin. You can reach us by going to our website at commanderinmtg.com. Our email is cast@commanderinmtg.com. On YouTube, we have a YouTube channel as well, Jimmy, but it doesn't have fancy animated cards, nor does it have spoilers.
Hopefully, but you one can of those by going to videocopilot.com and learning how to do all that stuff.
Yes, I will. While editing, I'll try that out. Or maybe while Nate's editing, I'll try that out.
Yeah,
Nate,
totally.
Nate can try it while I edit. Oh, anyway, there will be editing. Anyway, on YouTube, you can find us by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast. Sometimes we have our own URL, but that's only sometimes. On Reddit, we're Commander and MTG. On Facebook, we're Commander and MTG Podcast. And on Twitter, we are at Commander and MTG. Individually, on Twitter, I'm at Ketjack.
I am at Copain26.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And Jimmy, that's our show. Do you want to take us out in any special way?
Keep playing Commander. This is Jimmy from the Community Cup. Am I supposed to say anything else? No, just keep playing Commander, guys. It's the best.
Ashley's a pilgrim, mono red. Once you pump her up, she is my exploder. Ooh, you put the counters on, the counters on. Once you put 3 at a time, exploder. Always suit her up, like a Voltron. And always the hexproof, the dead touch, and the lifelink. And I, boom! My exploder.